You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to Aryan Britannia. Today's date is Monday, the 20th of August, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAryan.com. As it's Aryan Britannia and it's the start of another week, we are joined today by Max Musson from Western Spring. Max, how are you doing today?
I'm doing absolutely fine, actually. Yes, it's been a good weekend, and I've had a very enjoyable ride out on my motorbike, actually, because I do a bit of motorcycling, and it's been a good day for that because it's been dry but reasonably cool, and so not too hot with my motorcycle gear on.
I bet it's been a great summer for biking, actually. Very, very little rain.
Yeah, it has. Although some of the summer's been a tad on the hot side, and so, you know, when you're riding a bike wearing leathers and things, it can get a bit sweaty if the weather's too warm.
It does seem to be a very it's a white man's pastime, really, being a biker. I can't recall ever seeing any black bikers. It's a very white thing to do. Would you agree with that?
I've seen one or two black bikers, but generally, if you go to something like the British Motorcycle Grand Prix, it will be a 99.9% white affair. Yes, it's one of those pastimes that, generally speaking, doesn't seem to appeal to non-whites.
Wonderful, like skiing and swimming and all these other things that they just don't do. Blacks just don't do. Well, one thing that blacks do is attack whites, and we've got lots of evidence of them attacking white people in today's episode. But the first one that we should really be dealing with is this so-called terrorist attack that happened last week. Now, I talked about this a bit on the Daily Nationalist, about the fact that this was possibly the most incompetent terrorist ever. He ran a couple of cyclists over and then drove full pelt into one of the diversity barriers, smashed the front of the car up. So he really didn't succeed in doing that much damage, but straight away, Theresa May called the politicians back for a Cobra Committee meeting, and it was announced that this was terrorist. This was a terrorist attack. And the reason for them saying it was a terrorist attack is because it happened outside Westminster. And this is very much like accusing Russia of killing Skripal simply because the Skripals were actually Russian. So there's no actual evidence to show that this guy was a terrorist, but they just announced that immediately. Sadiq Khan said that they were going to ban cars. That is literally what he said. They want to ban cars outside Westminster. When the cause of all of this terrorism is always carried out by these same people. Now, whether this was terrorism or not, this was a black guy that actually wanted to kill people. So they just don't actually know what the motive is. And what the news report says is the Westminster terror suspect may not be a terrorist after all, as police can't find any evidence of political or religious motives. Sally Catter, 29, was arrested on Tuesday after his Ford Fiesta ZTEC rammed into pedestrians and cyclists outside the Houses of Parliament. Three people were injured, including two who needed hospital treatment, but have since been released. Catter could still be charged with serious non-terrorism crimes, including attempted murder, regardless of his motivations. His family fled war-torn Darfur in South Sudan, but there was nothing to suggest that they had any links to the various warring Islamist groups there, apart from the fact that he's Sudanese, and the Islamist groups are Sudanese. He also spent time in Libya before seeking asylum in Britain, but that was well before the revolution that toppled dictator Muammar Gaddafi. Catter lived 10 minutes down the road in Birmingham from Khalid Massoud, who killed 5 people and injured 50 in a terrorist attack on Westminster last year. However, there was nothing linking the pair, and there was no suggestion Catter's actions were a copycat of Massoud's car and knife attack. And apparently he's refusing to cooperate with police. He's pretending to be dumb. He has actually passed an English exam. He went to university and passed an English exam, so we paid for him to be educated, and now he's just pretending that he doesn't speak English. He's not answering any of the questions that the police are asking him. And as far as I'm aware, if it's a terrorist case, they can force you to answer the questions. Maybe that's just at the airport, they can force you to answer questions. I do think they had extra powers if they had a suspicion of there actually being terrorism. So this may just be incompetence, but I think it is likely that, the guy is a Muslim. And he was obviously going to the mosque that this other terrorist Muslim went to that did the same attack last year. He's thinking now, I'll just confuse them. I won't answer them. I'm not going to help them in any way. I'm just not going to say anything at all. But I think it's quite obvious he wanted to kill people. And what other reason is there for Muslims wanting to kill people? It's just what they do, isn't it, really? What do you think of this, Max?
Well, it reminds me of the so-called attack on the Finsbury Park Mosque, really, where it was a white guy that had driven some considerable distance to central London in a van, and then sort of mounted the pavement and supposedly drove into a crowd of Muslims that were going into the mosque. But from what I can gather, he didn't actually sort of really run anybody down, and that the person who died was an old chap who just had a heart attack with fright and died of his heart attack without actually having been physically run over by the guy that was driving the van. At least that's my impression of things. So I think that there's a little bit of competition for the most for the least effective terrorist going. So we can perhaps have a little bit of a chuckle to a certain extent over that particular honour. But I think that if the chap has come all the way from Birmingham to do what he did right in front of the Palace of Westminster, then I think it's probably a foregone conclusion that it was terrorist related, and it's just really a matter of getting him to speak, really. And I suppose the authorities are just letting him play dumb, and it will be interesting to see how it works out in court for him.
Well, I think he's what they're saying is that he wanted to get a visa to go. He wanted to go somewhere. It may be in the Sudan. It may be in Egypt. Apparently, the Sudanese embassy doesn't accept appointments, and people just queue up outside for 9 a.m. Obviously, a typical African way of doing things. And he left earlier in the morning in Birmingham in his car, possibly to go there to get this visa. And then he just sort of drove round and round and round in circles for 3 or 4 hours. And I think he just suddenly thought, well, I'm in this car. Why not? Why not run someone over? I think he probably just had this flash of inspiration that he would be a jihadi in his car of death, and then just messed it up. I think that's more likely. I don't think this was pre-planned or anything. It was just late at night, and he thought, well, why not? I'm in the car. I'm in London. There's Westminster. Let's go for it. You know, that's what it seemed like to me. And I know you've been looking into some of the government's strategies against coping with this, Max.
Well, yeah, my attention was drawn to the latest report. Let me see if I can find it now. It was the contest strategy, which is the United Kingdom strategy for counter-terrorism, and the latest version of it was published in June 2018. And really, it was nothing to do with this chap committing his act of very inefficient terrorism. It was more than the fact that there appeared to be further sanctions that were being taken in order to not necessarily counter terrorism, because I think as far as countering terrorism is concerned, there's pretty much universal agreement that the government should do everything possible to counter terrorism. I think that as far as people who are on the nationalist right are concerned, the thing that concerns us about the counter terrorism strategy is the fact that there is this counter extremism strategy that's part of it. And the counter-extremism strategy just simply is directed at people on the right to a far greater extent than it is directed towards people who are, for example, Muslim terrorists. And the thing is that there are people who are potential Muslim terrorists and actual Muslim terrorists who are quite rightly targeted by the security services, but the authorities and the security services accept that there are people who are Muslims who are quite decent and ordinary people, and so there is a category of respectable Muslims, and then there is a category of people who are quite definitely Muslim terrorists. And this contest strategy incorporates various measures to identify people who are being lured into acts of terrorism or being coming under the influence of people who are terrorists, and to try to save them from that and to try and steer them back into some form of wholesome and healthy Islamic ideology. And so there are these, as I say, these two categories of Muslims, those that are definitely terrorists who the authorities want to want to counter, but then those people who are regarded as good and wholesome Muslims. Whereas as far as what's referred to as neo-Nazi or right-wing terrorism is concerned, there is no good category as far as the government are concerned, or as far as the security services are concerned. There is no good category of people who are law-abiding and moderate nationalists. Anybody who's a nationalist, particularly anybody who adheres to a form of nationalism that is in any way racial or in any way ethnic or in any way cultural, are always labelled in the media and always spoken about by establishment politicians as if they're all as if we're all Nazis and neo-Nazis, and that there's no division between us and people who commit acts of terrorism. So whilst those young Muslims who are approached by the security services and who fall within the ambit of these counter-terrorism measures, they can be steered into a form of ideology which is acceptable to them, which is what is regarded as being moderate Islam. Whereas as far as people who are identified as being potentially falling under the influence of right-wing terrorists, for example, there is nowhere legitimate for those people to be steered. And so anybody who is of a nationalistic inclination and who has been targeted by the security services and this contest and prevent measures and all this sort of thing, these people, there is no legitimate box to put them in. They have to renounce their nationalism in order to get free of the monitoring, etc., that takes place as a result of them being identified by the security services. And this, I think, is a glaring omission on the part of the authorities, because it gives young nationalists who the authorities become concerned about, it gives them nowhere to go. Because if you if we sort of look back at the situation that occurred with regard to National Action were prescribed by the Home Secretary of the time, and National Action has been disbanded and no longer exists. But what happened subsequently was that one or two people who had previously been members of National Action decided that they wanted to, with a clean slate, start up some new organisations that were not then tainted with any kind of relationship with a potential terrorism. And those newer organisations that they created were themselves then immediately declared to be terroristic and declared to be National Action under a different name. And so what the government have done is they've denied the people who were tempted to perhaps go into extremism from a nationalist perspective. They've created a situation where those people have got nothing else that they can do. So whereas somebody who perhaps might have been tempted to go into Muslim extremism, they can still carry on working for Islam and promoting Islam as part of the one of the supposedly moderate arms of Islam, whereas as far as people who have been nationalists and who perhaps were tempted to go into extremism from a nationalist point of view, they've got no nationalist moderate groups, or no nationalist groups that are regarded as being moderate and legitimate by the government or by the authorities and the counter-terrorism authorities. And so it's a situation where somebody who might otherwise have left extremism, the extremism of National Action, and gone into and started an organization of their own or joined another organization where they then promoted nationalism through law-abiding and peaceful means, they're unable to do that because every time they start an organization, the organization gets closed down. And so what the authorities need to do is to take a more a broader perspective of this, and to accept that there must be a legitimate form of nationalism that isn't immediately branded as neo-Nazi and isn't immediately branded as extremist and isn't immediately targeted for disruption by the authorities.
They need a more nuanced view, don't they? And it's really shocking to hear that. I mean, you hear the young lads that were actually accused of being members of National Action that have been on remand or been in prison and then actually come out of prison, or have been accused of racism, anti-Semitism. They've been in prison, and when they come out, they're not allowed to have anything to do with legal, lawful nationalism. They're not allowed to make comments. Jada Franson is not allowed to talk to members of her own political party, a legal political party that are not a prescribed party, but she is not allowed to talk to them. And this is why she's not allowed to talk to them, because they don't differentiate between nationalism. I think part of the reason for this could be that we don't have community leaders. The Muslims have all these organizations which represent Islam. Whether they are actually connected to the member, to other Muslims is a moot point. These organizations claim to be speaking for Islam. When the government wants to speak to Muslims, it talks to these, what they call community leaders. And they liaise with these community leaders when they work out all these strategies, when they work out the contest strategy, when they work out the prevent strategy. But there are no nationalist leaders that they have liaised with to work out their counter-terrorism strategy. There are no white community leaders that they have spoken to about, directing people that are patriotic into positive ways where they're not going to, terrify the non-whites. Because that seems to be what this is around. They say, oh, well, if people see young men saying we want our country back, well, that terrifies the ethnic minorities. They're terrified that they're going to be attacked. Well, surely if you're patriotic and you love your country, you love your nation, there's got to be something that we can do within the law. I mean, everybody wants to stay within the law. But, none of those lads that are in prison are in there because they wanted to be in there.
No, that's right. And the other thing as well is that if we look at the apparatus of counter-terrorism, what we've got is the Home Secretary is Sajid Javid, who is a man of Pakistani and Muslim extraction. I think he doesn't actually practice Islam himself. He practices a form of Christianity, but he is of Pakistani Muslim origin, I believe, and also as part of the strategy, a lady has been appointed to be the head of counter-extremism and the counter-extremism strategy that forms part of the counter-terrorism strategy, and she is Sarah Khan, who I believe again is of Pakistani Muslim origin, and then we also have the head of counter-terrorism, Assistant Commissioner Neil Basu of the Metropolitan Police, who is Asian, and I can't find anywhere on the internet any reference to his religious background. He's always described as being of Indian ethnic origin, but they don't state whether he is of Indian Hindu or Indian Muslim origins. But we have a situation where potentially the three most influential positions within Britain's counter-terrorism strategy are held by people who have got no sympathy whatsoever with British nationalism, and so therefore have no inclination to try and create a category of moderate and law-abiding nationalist organisations to which young people who have perhaps strayed into extremism can be directed. And I think that's something that needs to change. We need to have a counter-terrorism strategy that is that reflects the population of Britain. You know, immigrant groups are always saying that television programmes have to reflect the reality of Britain. Well, the reality of Britain is that 85% of the British people are actually white. And of white British origin, and so therefore what ought to happen is we ought to have a counter-terrorism network and a counter-terrorism organisation and structure that is composed where 85% of the people involved in it are actually of white British extraction, and that certainly doesn't seem to be the case, certainly not as far as the high profile positions of greatest influence are concerned.
Well, if they're going to have Muslims that are running the counter-terrorism strategy, and yet they're going to direct at least half the resources against nationalists, surely they should be nationalists. You know, half the organisational structure of the counter-terrorism should be made up of nationalists, moderate nationalists. If they've got what they call moderate Muslims that are running it, why haven't they got moderate nationalists? I mean, they could pick someone like UKIP. They could have members of UKIP on the panel. That would be fair, because I would suggest that people like Khan and this woman that he's put in charge of this counter strategy, their loyalties are going to be to Islam. Their loyalties are going to be to Muslims. Now, that's what it says in the Quran. Their loyalties have to be to other Muslims. Anybody that doesn't believe in Islam is a kafir, is a dog, is an unbeliever. So they're going to be deliberately coming down as hard as they possibly can on white nationalists, and they're going to be coming down as easy as they possibly can on these Muslims. And the Muslims are going to be offered a moderate version of Islam that they can go to, where they can still serve Islam. And the nationalists are being told, you're not even allowed to join UKIP. You're not even allowed to wave a Union Jack flag. It's completely unfair what's going on here. I just hope that more members of public wake up to it. And I think the general public really are waking up to what's going on. I mean, they have to. And if you just look at the black crime wave that's going on at the moment, it's just absolutely incredible. We're hearing crimes that I never thought I would hear about on the streets of Britain at the moment. I've got a selection here of incidents that happened last week. This is the first one. A teenager is fighting for his life after allegedly being disemboweled during a quadruple stabbing in London's so-called Murder Mile. They've actually got a place called Murder Mile in London, and we're now seeing people being disemboweled with machetes by black gangs. Describing the incident on the Elmington estate in Camberwell, a witness said that they saw four or five black boys running. Then all of a sudden, I could hear, "Help, help." Another resident said they saw one of the four stab victims grievously wounded, with his intestines falling out on the ground, according to the Mail Online. Six male suspects, said to be aged between 15 and 16, were arrested following the incident, which took place a stone's throw from the street where drill rapper Sadiq Kamara, also known as Incognito, was stabbed to death earlier this month. So we're now regularly seeing stabbings on the streets of London and elsewhere in Britain, is being carried out by black gangs, and they're of ages 15 to 16. And apparently this was over a belt. Somebody had stolen somebody else's belt, and they ended up being disemboweled for this. And I mean, they are saying that they've actually got six male suspects here, but most of these crimes are going unsolved. Only 5% of crimes in Britain now are actually being solved. And all of this is caused by the non-whites that we have in our country. You won't hear of white gangs going out and disemboweling people over a belt. And at the ages of 15 and 16, you know, they're adults at that age. Negroes are adults at that age. And what they're doing is they're behaving exactly as they do in Africa, where they have the intertribal warfare that they have over there. these gangs are just the same as the tribes that they have over in Africa. All of this is been imported into Britain, and none of the mainstream press is pointing out the fact that this is a, it's all to do with ethnicity. It's because these people are black that they are behaving like this. They're just sort of throwing their hands up in the air and saying, well, we're really shocked that all this crime is going on in the country, and it must be because the police don't have enough resources, or it must be because the kids don't have enough youth clubs. There isn't enough investment in youth in this area. But it doesn't matter how much investment you put in, they're still going to carry out these crimes. I mean, these drill rappers, they've got lots of money, but they're still carrying out these crimes. They're still getting stabbed. Do you want to add something to this, Max, on this first one here before I move on to the second?
Yeah, it's just that the stabbings and attacks with knives used to be pretty much unheard of in Britain, and it's something that has increased in frequency as mass immigration has continued, and it's a matter that the culture and the social mores and the social standards that exist in a country are driven by the character of the population, and it's not just coincidence that there is a very high level of violence in Africa, and now we're seeing those high levels of violence reproduced on the streets of London boroughs, where that have the highest numbers of immigrants. You know that this is connected. I mean, another statistic, I was reading this the other day, was that the number of acid attacks that take place in Britain, something like I think they were saying that now this in the region of 450 acid attacks that are carried out each year in this country. But the interesting statistic was that over a third of those 450 acid attacks took place in just one central London borough. I can't remember which borough it was, but they all take place in just one central London borough, which is just amazing, isn't it? And I think the overwhelming number of all of those acid attacks take place in various other parts of London. So it's, you know, London is the immigration capital of Britain, with the highest proportion of non-Indigenous British people within the population, and here we have a situation where, as far as knife crime is concerned, it's the knife crime centre, capital of Britain, and it's also the acid attack capital of Britain as well. And these statistics, they're just not surprising, really. They're just, you know, what you would expect, and pretty much what people on the nationalist right have been predicting for decades, that this is the future that is being created for our people by those people who insist that we must have uncontrolled mass immigration from the third world. And it's those people that have insisted on uncontrolled mass immigration from the third world, those people who are responsible for all these young people now being stabbed and now being disfigured with acid attacks, because these kind of attacks wouldn't be taking place in this country if it wasn't for mass immigration.
Yeah, disemboweling the drummer Lee Rigby having his head chopped off the other year. And I remember those acid attacks when it was 300, and it was like, well, it,